by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We have just a fine guest with us this evening, Dr. John Hall from San Antonio, and he's written a fine book, Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control. Welcome to our program, John Hall.
Hey, Jordan, how are you doing?
Okay, boy, I'll tell you what, I've got to scan over this. I didn't read it entirely, but boy, you've got a lot of power-packed chapters. But first, tell us, our listening audience, a little bit about your background and about yourself, and then how you begin to get involved in this topic and this situation in uncovering this. Oh my gosh, it's so insightful what you've done with this. Tell our audience about that.
Well, as you said, I'm an anesthesiologist in pain management physician, and never intended necessarily to be the spearhead against the technology we're going to be talking about. But I've been engaged to a girl that, you know, we had broken up, and then she came to me a couple of years later with a really interesting story that she was, you know, being stalked by people she didn't know and felt like she was being attacked with directed energy weapons and was hearing the voices of her stalkers in her head, trying to tell her what to do, or, you know, saying vulgarities to her, describing her whereabouts like they were really watching. And of course, she felt like maybe there were cameras in her condominium or microphones in her condominium, which there weren't. And she turned to me and said, you know what, I know people are going to think I'm crazy. You know, I need your help. So having heard a little bit about this particular kind of technology and this kind of stalking before, I gave her the benefit of the doubt. I knew this girl well, knew she wasn't on drugs. She wasn't, you know, mentally ill. At the time, she was in her early 30s and successful and educated. So I said, you know what, let's do a little counter surveillance. Let's put some microphones in your condo and see if we can catch these people that are breaking in. And we did. As I started trying to help her, got followed myself, ran the plate numbers on the vehicles that were following her and following me, and they all traced back to a private investigator who was former FBI and hired mostly family members to work for him, who I had heard about from another physician in San Antonio that had used him kind of for harassment. His exact words were he was hiding him from his wife in case he ever needed to make her look crazy during a divorce. So I'd heard about this guy before. He's used for corporate espionage and things like that. The technology he's using is what's really interesting. And so we set up some counter surveillance measures and found out who was doing it, identified the culprits. As it turns out, he's being allowed access to a very powerful, actually, weapon system that I spoke to a friend of mine in the CIA and said, you know, is this particular tracking and system being commercialized, or is it still covert? And he said, as far as he knew, it was still a weapon of war for use abroad only. And the technology we'll be talking about is a slang term, and the Russians use the term psychotronic weaponry, and that means weaponry based out of the electromagnetic spectrum that is meant to interact with the human nervous system. And it can be used for tracking, it can be used for communication. It was worked on pretty extensively as a way to communicate with operatives in the field without using a radio, by basically microwaving communications directly into the skull. And if you look at the Army's addendum to non-lethal weapons, you'll get an accurate description of that technology. It's microwave-based. based on the Frey effect, when Dr. Frey had first noticed in the 60s that you could use people that are around radar systems would hear the radar in their head, and they figured out how to modulate communications on that. So basically, it evolved from that to being able to take the EEG and heterodyne it or modify it and put it back in the person while you're communicating with this microwave type of effect and tracking the person, you know, with biometric markers. So basically what she was going through and what about 300,000 other people in the United States are going through is a form of experimentation where they're using this technology to see how well it can be used to control the masses. And what you'll hear these people complain about is organized stalking, you know, being followed around everywhere you go 24/7 by people that you don't know that are well organized and doing it. Home break-ins, nothing stolen, stuff moved around, being attacked with directed energy weapons, and hearing the voices of the people doing the surveillance in your head that no one else can hear. So you can imagine when one of these victims goes to a doctor and says, I'm being attacked, I've got burns all over my body, and I'm hearing the people talk to me while they do it. Well, you know, our natural inclination, as we most of us have been taught as physicians, is that if you're hearing voices, there's a mental illness problem. So you get referred to a psychiatrist, and of course the psychiatrist doesn't look at any of the research you've done online about all the other victims, and you get a diagnosis, and your life pretty well spirals downhill from that point.
Is this an extension of an earlier program called MKUltra?
Yes, it is. It's a direct extension of MKUltra. MKUltra started in the late 50s, and all of the sub-projects were geared at figuring out a way to remotely control human beings. And towards the end of MKUltra, they were actually starting to use radio frequency. Early on, they were using chipping. Dr. Delgado was one of the main researchers using brain chipping. And actually, after MKUltra kind of came apart, or at least the it was released in Freedom of Information after the Rockefeller Commission, what they were doing. The research didn't stop. It just went a little further underground. But Delgado was one of the ones initially using chips. And even before his death, he made the comment that that chipping was no longer necessary, that everything he was doing to control people's brains using a chip buried in the brain could be now done with broadcasting. Meaning using electromagnetic waveforms to do the same thing. And the first book I actually published on this was in 2008. It was called A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. And it is the story of the girl I helped exposed to this. The book that recently released, Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, goes a little more in depth into the technology and the research behind it and the fact that we don't have any safeguards against being experimented on in this country.
Right. There's virtually the mind is open then to being penetrated by these types of psychotronic weapons or surveillance or to transmit into the brain, you're saying then. There's no safety factor there, right? There's no firewall.
No,
there's no firewall. That's the word I was searching for.
Well, and that's a great comment, because there was actually a really good article that came out about 10 years ago now called The Mind Has No Firewall.
Yes.
And that was written when the inklings of this technology first started kind of to leak out, mostly in conspiracy systems. And as it turns out, Robert Malik in the early 70s had figured out that if you shoot two dissimilar frequencies into the human brain, that each hemisphere will imprint each of those two separate frequencies. The brain creates an interference frequency that it actually transmits. And what they figured out how to do is how to capture that interference frequency, decode EEG back out of it. And then the two terms that we use now, EEG cloning, means cloning your EEG and just in its pure form, and then you can place that one into another human being that will display whatever your traits may be. Or you can do EEG heterodyne, which means alter that EEG to cause a fast heart, cause arm twitching, to cause a headache, and then transmit that back into the target. And as they re-entrain that modified heterodyne EEG, they'll demonstrate the traits that you want them to demonstrate.
Oh, my gosh. This is just a horrible thing that we're talking about. Now, the MK Ultra was in the 60s, so they've had like 50-something years plus, perhaps, to perfect this, to even make it a scientific technique that's even more perfectible. Is that true? I mean, the technology's had, what, 50-plus years to perfect itself, right?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, as technology gets better, then the results that you can get better. Early in MK Ultra, the way they were using it to try to create Manchurian candidates is they would give you high doses of electroshock therapy, high doses of drugs, play a tape of a new personality 24/7, you know, through your ears to create Manchurian candidates. And that type of temperature-based control did work. And up at McGill University in Cameron, would take women that were diagnosed with postpartum depression and exposed them to 900 times normal electroconvulsive therapy, shock them while they gave them drugs and created a new personality. And many of those victims, a lot of those victims actually sued through the Canadian government and got a settlement. And many of them addressed by several psychologists and psychiatrists that have worked with them to try to get them back to normal. In one particular case, one girl had been wiped completely clean. I mean, she was just a of a personality. And when her husband got her back, not only did she not remember being married, she didn't even know what being married or having a husband is. I mean, she was basically taken back to
a my gosh.
State. So she had to be taught back her entire personality. She knew how to play the guitar in the past. All of that had to be relearned, just like you would have the learning phases, you know, from 0 to 10 years
right.
old. So, I mean, it's even back then it worked, but as they found out how sensitive the human brain is to electromagnetic energy, they started looking for various waveforms that they could use on the brain to exact the same type of symptoms with the same outcome. And as it turns out, the brain is very, very sensitive to extremely few waves or ELO.
What you've done is take, have you had more than one patient now, or have there been other patients come forward that you've been able to examine and so forth?
Well, I have them as patients, but I have just interviewed them and looked at them as
patients. So you have a lot of people getting in touch with you, right, on this subject?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what was amazing is I basically wrote the first book just to kind of expose what was going on. And after doing a couple of radio shows after the first book, I was bombarded with more emails than the memory in my server could hold, with people voicing, you know, not similar complaints, but identical complaints. Identical all the way down to the stalking, identical down to what they were experiencing. And when you see that, you know, most doctors and most psychiatrists in each town, they may see one or two of these victims that come in and complain that, you know, the government is stalking them and controlling their mind. Well, it's easy to diagnose that as delusional or schizophrenic because you're seeing one patient. You're not seeing the rest of the plethora of people that are voicing the complaints. Well, if you look at it on a grander scale, you know, if you've got 300,000 people and they're all complaining that they're hearing people describe in their head what they're wearing, what they're doing, what they're thinking, and now we have these controlled shooters that every one of them is claiming that they're being vocally, you know, controlled or having voices in their heads control them into doing it. You know, yet eventually, you know, medicine, psychiatrists, psychologists have to kind of turn and go, okay, you know, is there technology that can do this? And actually there's multiple ways to put voices in someone's head. Infrasonic sound will do it. Ultrasonic sound will do it. Microwave will do it. There's even some acoustic technologies now that will do it. Matter of fact, you can go online and buy a setup called Audio Spotlight, which is a little rectangular antenna that uses ultrasonic sound, and you can point it at one person in a crowd and communicate with just that person. Another form of it was called Silent Sound Spread Spectrum, or SQUAD, and SQUAD was what was used in the first Iraqi war, when they had 1,500 Iraqi soldiers got to get on their knees and surrender their weapons to about 100
My
Marines.
My gosh.
And it was done using SQUAD. They all heard Allah tell them to surrender in their heads.
My gosh. Maybe we ought to use that on ISIS, huh?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, one thing I would like to be clear with your listeners on this is, you know, I'm a physician, and of course, I'm against any type of non-consensual.
Yeah, well, you, most of this is non-consensual. Yeah, let's make that point, right?
Yeah. Now, I mean, I'll be honest. This technology has a use. It would have some good uses if they would admit to having it and release it for us to use medically. And it has some good uses in the field of war as it was intended. But when you have, you know, doctors and lawyers and housewives and subcontractors accessing it to do the actual experimental phase of it and using it for torture and using it for rape of just everyday citizens here, you know, not as a device of war, then I've got a problem.
Well, you make
ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, and the problem is we have no safeguards in legislation.
Yes.
Protecting the U.S. public from government experimentation.
Yeah, you make a point in previous interviews that a lot of these are private companies that are doing this on a contracting basis. Now, one of my questions was how and who actually picks out these targets that they're actually performing these operations on? Who is that by the private, company, or did the government is providing them some kind of a list or something? Well, how does that work?
Well, it depends on the case. You know, I have met with a lot of whistleblowers. Actually, I've met with people that were whistleblowers in the NSA itself. The National Geospatial Agency, you know, several others. And with those people, it probably is being done directly by those agencies. Now, most of the victims I've met with are just common everyday people. They're not radicals politically. They're not radicals financially. They're not terrorists. They're housewives. They're, you know, people just trying to, you know, go day to day and make a living. It doesn't appear that there's an official government list of them. What it appears to be from doing counter surveillance on the group that we know works out of Texas is that every city basically has a group that's allowed access to the technology. And I think most of those are going to follow suit with what we discovered in San Antonio, that it's probably former NSA, former CIA, or former FBI agents working under the guise as private investigators. And the rules of engagement seem to be that they can target whoever they want to target for whatever reason, as long as they at least watch them for the rest of their natural lives and the appropriate data gets picked up by the agencies that actually release the technology. So in saying that, you'll see some predilections for who they target. Now, there's a group in Palm Springs, California. It's about 60 gay men that are all hearing the same voice. They're all hearing the voice of a girl that goes by Lisa and talks to them while she attacks them. You have a group here that kind of does corporate espionage and hires out if you want to destroy one of your competitors or destroy his family by making them appear mentally ill. He kind of and sexual assault seems to be their thing. But and each city will have a group that's allowed carte blanche to pick victims however they want to pick them. But in the end, if you take the whole group of victims nationwide, it looks like a random sample. And, you know, coming from a medical and a research background for this type of technology, you would want to use it on a random
sample.
So you think
it's more of a research because of this random sample that you're just speaking about. You think that's why it centers around more research for the future. Is that it?
Yeah, it would appear that way because you can tell from talking to the victims and seeing the way it's done, that it's being done with a manual. You know, it's these people are told how to do it and what to do because it's the same in every city. You know, it starts off with stalking. I mean, usually the first thing they notice is there's people following into the store, waiting around their house, you know, sitting in front of the house, breaking in, nothing stolen, just things rifled through, you know, just more of an assessment phase. And then it'll kind of escalate to where, you know, maybe some electronic disturbances, your emails are disappearing, your phone calls are being spoofed. Then almost all of them will get tinnitus or ringing in the ears. And then not long after the ringing in the ears, it slowly degrades into hearing voices, noticing twitching, burning of the skin, burning, you know, severe heartburn that comes off and on, severe headaches, seizure activity, heart rate speeding up and down. And then eventually they get around to talking to you in your head while they attack you with these weapons modalities. So, and it's done the same way in every major city. I mean, each victim you talk to might have a theory of why they were victimized. You know, if they maybe had a family member in the military or had an intelligence background, you know, somewhere down the generations. But when you look at the methodology of how it's being done the same way in every case. Just about.
Okay. The actual victims, for example, some of those that were the jumpers on 9/11, they experienced some kind of a heating effect inside their bodies, it was reported, when they were on cell phones to their friends and then they jumped. Would that be a microwave effect or not? No?
Well, yeah. I mean, most of these victims do notice that as they're being, you know, microwaved, that they do notice body heating, your body temperature elevates. And the amazing thing is the minute they shut it off, you
really
get normal. Same thing with heating up the gastric contents in the stomach can cause a very severe heartburn that won't go away with antacids. But the minute they shut it off, it does go away. Same thing with the twitching. You know, and most of these victims are hearing their perpetrators talk to them while they're being attacked. And that's the most disturbing thing to them because they know they're under attack. They know they're under surveillance. But only they can hear it and only they can feel it. It's directed at the individual, and it's mostly done through the brain. So standing next to a victim that's maybe getting severely attacked isn't going to affect you because it's only keyed in on them. And so most of them get asked, well, if you're getting attacked so bad, I'm standing right next to you, why aren't I? And that's because it is person-specific, not only in the communication part of it, but in the attack part
as well.
What
about delusional disorder? Is that figuring into this on some diagnoses or not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, anytime you get parked in front of a psychiatrist, and typically what happens is early on the victim thinks that they're under some type of surveillance by the FBI or the CIA. So, you know, they tell their family that. Their family recommends a psychiatric appointment. By that time, they've done some research online, so they bring their packet of materials, you know, showing, well, look, this is happening to a lot of people, and this is how it's done, or that's how they think it's done. And the psychiatrist are mainly looking at giving you a diagnosis and wrapping you into therapy. So they're really not going to look at much of the information you bring along. They're going to diagnose you. The meds won't help. That's one way to tell between the true mentally ill and a victim. Is even bad schizophrenia gets better on medication. These victims, you know, you can put them on any medication, and they're still going to complain of stalking and still complain that they're hearing it and that they're being attacked.
You mentioned a Faraday cage in a relationship to some of your past researches. Is that what you do sometimes to isolate problems inside the Faraday cage to see if there's a transmission a component of this surveillance?
Yeah, and actually through some of our research, because chips have been found in some of the victims, the big question is, do you need to be chipped for this to happen? And one of the things we did is we were allowed use of a research Faraday cage in Belgium. That was through an organization that I'm on the board of called ISAACT, which is the International Center Against Covert Technologies, or Against Abuse of Covert Technologies. And we were allowed to use a research Faraday cage to put victims and non-victims in there and then do some RF scanning on them to see if they're transmitting or if there's any foreign signals within that Faraday cage. And when we did that, we took known victims who had been scanned and were positive on scan. And then we took some of the people there that worked at the center that were controls that had no history of targeting. And you know, sure enough, the people who were controls didn't scan positive. They weren't transmitting anything. The people that were complaining of being a TI did transmit from their bodies on RF scan. In a Faraday cage, most of them did report a sense of well-being that they felt the targeting had improved. Now, the problem is you can't live in a Faraday cage and you can't interact with society normally in a Faraday cage. And even if we invented one that was a wearable suit with a helmet, you can't go walking around and, you know, and not be diagnosed as mentally ill wearing a Faraday suit. So, you know, we've kind of looked for other ways to try to actually treat this or to defend against it, I guess I would say.
Is that why they come up with this tin hat type of thing to pass off some of these nut cases, just trying to make people that are hearing voices appear to be nuts and they don't know what they're talking about? Is that part of it sometimes? The general public is trying to, think, oh, they're just crazy, you know? But.
Because, I mean, if you have somebody who really is not familiar with technology, they've never dealt with it before, they know their head's being attacked with something, so they, you know, kind of common sense reasoning, if you can put some form of metal around you that maybe it'll reflect whatever wave is being used. So a lot of them did try to line hats with tinfoil and things like that to protect themselves. And I think it was more of just them looking for any way they could to try to protect themselves from being hurt. But then after the public saw that, you started having the tinfoil hat people comments come out. And as it turns out, you know, ELF and scalar waves, which are the two that are probably being used, can't be shielded, you know, by metal very well, at least not with just tinfoil. It can be attenuated a little bit in a Faraday cage, but still not completely shielded. So that's where that came from.
Right. You're talking about the most ominous thing is that is this country becoming like a surveillance state using this electromagnetic prison? Is that what it's becoming, what they're building out there through this experimentation? And there is something called the space fence that Lockheed Martin is developing to replace an earlier satellite surveillance system. So are we proceeding towards some kind of electronic prison system here in this country or what?
Well, pretty much we're already there. You know, aside from this technology, the NSA already has some pretty incredible technology just to monitor all your communication. I haven't gotten into depth, and I do get in depth in the book about some of it, but on the interviews I've done, we haven't talked about the ways they can actually monitor your computers, and they've got interdiction programs now where our laptops and our phones are actually being altered and having chips put in them that can transmit data to receivers that the NSA has prior to us being available, being able to buy them. And that's called the interdiction program. And they're using particularly two types of devices. One's called a howler monkey and one is called a cotton mouth. And the cotton mouth is a little chip that goes in the cable between your computer and your monitor. And the howler monkey comes in several different configurations. It can be put in a phone or any type of laptop. And these two little chips, when they bombard them with continuous wave radar, or CWR, they will transmit all your data up to 6 kilometers away to a receiving station. And as you've seen, we've had a proliferation of these, quote, cell phone towers that nobody's claiming. The phone companies are saying they're not theirs. The government's saying they're not theirs. But me and you both know, especially you, having being on radio, and I've been on radio, to put up a tower, you need a construction permit. You know, you need a construction permit from your local municipality, and you need one from the FCC. So these towers, you know, aren't unknown. Somebody knows about them. And my best guess would be that it's probably the NSA and that they're probably receiving towers. Because no matter how rural you live, almost all of us now are probably within 6 kilometers of a receiving station.
Right. When I was in Germany, I was in the ASA. I don't know if you ever heard the Army Security Agency. We worked for NSA back then, and that was 1963, 64, and 65. So I got a little bit of a taste of what the NSA was about, but it was in the foreign operations. We never did anything in this country. But since then, since the 60s, this thing is really, since 9/11, that seems to be the key date that they just started locking down this country and pushing all this security stuff on everyone. And the public is just so open to it. And they're not questioning some of this. What do you think?
Well, I mean, when they start using national security as a defense, you'd be surprised how many people just are willing to throw out their civil rights and their right to privacy in the name of national defense. And I bring that up in the book, too. You know, the chances of you being killed by a terrorist bomb here or abroad is almost one in a million. The chances of you being killed in your car on the way to your radio station today is probably one in about 300. So, you know, the comment I even made in the book is that I think automobiles are waging a much better jihad against us than the Muslims are. But that doesn't get the press that the Arabs do, you know, or the Muslims do, the radicals. And the American public is going to believe whatever they're spoon-fed by the press, and the press is pretty well controlled. But, I mean, you know, yeah, I think we became basically a surveillance state long ago.
Yes. You dedicated this book to Dr. Fred Bell. Tell us about that relationship.
Fred Bell had done some physics work for the Army and the DOD, and actually done some early work with this technology as far as kind of inventing some of the devices needed to do it. And Fred Bell, you know, later on in life, when he saw that it was being used experimentally on the public, had came out against it, you know, pretty radically. Him and I worked together pretty closely. He was based out of California. I think Paradigm was his company. And we kind of found each other just, you know, through strives to expose this and at least educate the public. And when Jesse Ventura decided to do a show called Brain Invaders as part of his conspiracy theory show based on this technology, the production people called me and said, well, can you put us in touch with you know, legitimate people that can talk about this? So I put them in touch with Duncan, Robert Duncan, and with Fred Bell and myself. Well, then they didn't get the season renewed. So a year went by. Well, then after a year, they got the season renewed, but they had a different production person. So I called up, and, you know, both of these men had agreed to be on the show, you know, under the, you know, the agreement that I was going to be on as well. And I called the production people, and they said, well, we really don't have a budget, and we're going to just kind of, you know, hodgepodge the footage that we've already shot together to create a show. And Fred Bell kind of was out on a limb already doing the show. He had told me probably several months before they actually filmed that his handlers were not going to be happy about him exposing the technology on the show. And as you remember, it was 48 hours later after filming that he was found dead in his hotel of an apparent heart attack. So, I mean, most of us feel like he was probably murdered.
The night that they had this memorial program on the BBS, I went on there and spoke. Because we had Dr. Fred Bell on our program several times, Charlotte Littlefield and I did, and we really respected the man, and he stood for truth and trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, Fred was a good guy. There was a time when we were kind of coordinating efforts where we spoke just about every night. Great sense of humor. I mean, he was constantly emailing me little funny jokes and things. I mean, he was a good guy, and I think he was in it for the right reasons, especially with his past. You know, when you're doing that kind of research, you never know what the full puzzle is going to be. The way government research works, you know, they give this group one thing to work on, another group something to work on. Everybody works on a piece of the puzzle, but nobody knows what the final picture is going to be. Well, you know, it wasn't until 20 or 30 years later where he got to see, you know, what part of the picture his little puzzle piece went into, and he didn't like
right.
it at all. So, you know, he came out, you know, pretty against the use of his technology.
Right. Bart seems to come to my mind also as far as heart attacks go. What kind of techniques, psychotronic type devices, can they induce heart attacks with?
Well, I mean, the heart is an electric component of the body. So is the brain. Makes the heart beat or fibers that run through the muscle that actually give electrical impulses to make your atrium and your ventricles beat. And if anything you can introduce to disturb that electrical impulse, like for instance, when you have cardiac VTAC or cardiac arrest, you know, we shock you, we use current to bring the heart back into beat. Well, the same thing, you can use current to make it stop as well. And there's actually acoustic weapons that, you know, with the right frequency of acoustics, if you catch the beating heart on its expansion phase with a similar and simultaneous and exact acoustic wave to the chest, you can actually stop the heart that way too. So, I mean, there's several ways. Or, you know, if you're attacking the brain, you can actually attack the vagus nerve coming out of the brain. to do the same thing.
What do you mean by sociocracy in your book?
Sociocracy is kind of the term I coined for the feeling that because we can still actually go to a voting booth and elect people, that we still have a democracy. You know, in socialist countries, you know, you reach a point where they just no longer hold elections. We still hold elections, and we still have the feeling that when we go to the voting booth, we can change things. But unfortunately, right now, I think we've got two parties that both want bigger government and that certainly both want government control. So basically, we've already reached a point in this country where greater than 50% of the people are actually one form or another on the government dole, whether that's through straight up welfare, through disability, or through working for the government, and less than 50% now who are actually in the private sector paying tax. So once you reach that point, then you're really no longer a democracy. You're more of a socialist country, especially when we now have a government that controls our water. They control our food through Monsanto. They're controlling the internet. They're controlling all of our communications, and they would like to control our guns. So far, they haven't been able to create enough upheaval or enough mass shooters for a public outcry for gun control, even though Feinstein, Boxer, and some of them have a current bill in Congress for gun confiscation. Really, you know, disarming us is about the last phase they need.
The third largest building in Washington, D.C. area, and that means Virginia right there also, is occupied by the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. The largest building is the the Pentagon. a slip of the tongue there, John. Okay. Anyway, the Pentagon is the largest building. Okay, I was saying pentagram building, but anyway, the Pentagon building is the largest building. The second largest building in the Washington area is the John Reagan building, Foreign Trade Building, downtown Washington, D.C. And then this National Geospatial Intelligence Agency is the third largest building. Now, when they presented this photograph a while back of Hillary and all of them sitting in this operations room and White House, whatever, and they were looking at the killing of bin Laden or something, laying on the table, I think, was a briefing paper from that agency. Are they using that to run some of these operations or what?
Well, it's a combination. I mean, it's mostly NSA and CIA-based technology, but the National Geospatial Agency, Intelligence Agency, and the National Reconnaissance Office are the two that actually control the everyday functions of the satellites. You know, they're the ones that aim them, upload and download software and keep everything operational. And I've actually met with several whistleblowers that have been attacked for, you know, blowing the whistle on some impropriety in both of those organizations. And actually, if you remember, the NSA kind of got caught. They had a number of their agents were using the technology to spy on ex-wives or spy on girls that they saw at the store that they were attracted to. And it was so prevalent that they actually gave it a name. Instead of HUMINT and SIGINT, Humans Intelligence, Signals Intelligence, they called it LOVE.
Oh, my gosh.
It was happening so frequently that these guys would use their resources to basically look inside the house of, you know, a girl that they saw that they were attracted to, or an ex-wife to see
her
husband. And it was happening frequently enough that they gave it a name. Feinstein was addressed about that. She's on the National Defense Council, and she said, well, she was going to take a hard look, and that from what she knew, that was only one or two cases of that happening, and that she would get to the bottom of it and get back to the public, of course, which she never did. But for them to actually give it a name, it's certainly more than one or two people. The other problem we have in society right now is the number of independent contractors that have clearances. The CIA and the NSA both are subcontracting a lot of their work out to private individuals. A lot of them may have been hired initially by the NSA or the CIA or did their 20 years, but then they retire and they get a job with Booz Allen or CACI or Level 3 or any number of these contract groups. that are actually civilian groups filled with people that still have top secret clearances. So in no time in history have we had the number of civilian people running around with top secret clearances that can access this type of technology without any type of constraint on them through the government. And even the government doesn't constrain its own employees with much oversight. So you can imagine if you're an independent contractor with a clearance, you have probably no oversight.
Right. There was this report a while back, Top Secret America. And I think it had to deal with exactly what you're saying. It was done by Washington Post. I think Priest was one of the authors of it. But it went into detail on the number of private companies that have access to top secret information and so forth. And it's just mind-boggling that they've privatized a lot of this intelligence stuff. And it could be in the hands of people like 30, 35 years old that don't have the wisdom to administer these types of this information. See? What do you think?
Well, that's exactly it. And like I said, it's grown exponentially, the number of people that have clearances. And, you know, I don't know if you remember it's about 10 years ago now, in San Antonio, there was an entire neighborhood that for years complained that their garage doors were opening and closing on their own, or their electrical wiring was being shut down. And finally, after this neighborhood, the people had complained multiple times, the NSA finally came forward and admitted that they were experimenting with a new ground wave communications technology. And it was coming across this particular neighborhood and was messing up all their electronics. Well, that's a lot of the same things that TIs, you know, across the nation are complaining about. You know, lights going off and on their own, you know, garage doors opening and closing on their own, TVs coming off and on their own. So, I mean, that was kind of a backwards admission that they have the technology to do this. But the problem is that also their subcontractors have access to that technology. And without any oversight, I mean, they can use it on whoever they want to use it on.
Right. The technology that can be projected from space is very great, and it seems to be related through Colonel Bearden gets into scalar technology. How does scalar technology apply to the devices that these people are using today on these targeted individuals and so forth?
Well, and that's scalar. Actually, the big name in scalar research is Constantine Mail, M-E-Y-L. And I actually communicated with him. And, you know, we were trying various forms of shielding methods and stuff like that with some of these victims. So I got in touch with him, and we talked several times and said, you know what, traditional shielding methods don't seem to be working on these people, which means that it's either ELF-based. And his exact words were, if you're trying, you know, all the traditional shielding methods and they're still experiencing anything, it's scalar until proven otherwise, is exactly what he said. And the problem with actually doing anything about scalar waves is not only is it hard to shield, but it's even hard to detect, because scalar waves don't operate according to the same physics as regular electromagnetic waves. Basically, the way you create a scalar wave is take two electromagnetic waves, shove them against each other or opposing ends, and then what erupts is actually a scalar wave. And scalar waves also produce energy at what they strike. So, you know, one way to prove that, and Constantine actually can prove that in the lab, by putting a scalar wave generator in a room, and you can set the long, like, garage-style lights, the UV lights, just the bulbs on the floor around it, and the energy will actually light the bulbs without them being connected to any type of current. So, I mean, that's one of the interesting things with scalar waves, and most of these people are reporting pain when they get hit with these type of weapons, and there is a pretty strong belief that some of this is being done with scalar. And the other thing is they're going to experiment with whatever types of waveforms they can actually come up with. So.
Right. the interferences, I should say the pollution of electromagnetic energy in general. Okay, let's talk about it in general. There's so much out here now. Is this causing cancer then, or inducing cancer, or what? What's going on in that area? I've seen to remember a book called The Body Electric by Becker a while back. It's an older book.
Yeah.
But he sort of he broke ground back then, you know, in trying to describe the body and the subjected to certain dynamics and so forth.
Well, and the, you know, the research is still being done, you know, and that's hard research to do because most of what we're bombarded with is Wi-Fi now, a lot of it. And as you can see, many of the studies that are being done are financed or funded by cellular companies. So, of course, those research studies are coming out and saying that, no, everything looks good. It's not causing cancer. Well, then you have other studies that are non-cellular company funded that say, oh, yeah, you know, we're seeing lower sperm counts in men, you know, that are being bombarded with this and, you know, and some forms of cancer and cataracts and premature aging. Now, some convincing studies that I have seen, if you look in the last 10 years, we've had an exponential rise in type 2 diabetes, and not necessarily in obese people. You know, at first we wrote it off as, well, Americans are getting fatter, we're eating more, you know, fast food, and, you know, as weight gain goes up, you're going to see an increase in type 2 diabetes. But what we're seeing now is people coming in that have almost no vitamin D3 in their bodies, which is a requirement for glucose control and sugar control. Even people that are in the sun all day long, which sun is supposed to hit your skin and stimulate vitamin D production. Well, even people that are out in the sun are coming in with negligent vitamin D levels. Even the CDC has said that vitamin D3 deficiency in human beings is now an emergency state, that everybody should be tested, and if they're low, supplemented with vitamin D3. Well, vitamin D3 is integral in metabolizing your sugar, keeping your sugars down. Well, at the same time we've seen electromagnetic pollution go up, we've also seen type 2 diabetes go up. And there's been some convincing studies that being bombarded and surrounded by constant RF energy may be contributing to the rise in type 2 diabetes.
How about autoimmune diseases? Are they related to any of this electromagnetic problem, or would that be more shot-based or immunizations or vaccination-based?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's done many studies on autoimmune disease based on EMF. I know chronic EMF exposure actually decreases the number of cells in your body that are there to scavenge free radicals. And increased free radicals can certainly cause autoimmune disease and cancer itself. But, you know, like I said, most studies have some form of funding. And when you look at those studies, you have to look and see who's funding them, because whoever's funding them typically is going to get the answer that they want. So you really have to find unbiased studies, and those are getting difficult to find.
Right. Monsanto, is the GMO figuring up in any way into any of this research that you've done or not?
No, I haven't spent a lot of time doing it. I can tell you my personal belief on it. Yeah, my personal belief is that God created animals and God created plants, and the two aren't supposed to mix. But, you know, and Monsanto, their big thing is splicing animal DNA into plant DNA, using either botulinum DNA, you know, to make things bug resistant, or horseshoe crab DNA into plants to make them more prolific at producing. The troubling thing with Monsanto is that in one of the recent farm bills that Obama passed, and this slipped through with not many people noticing, but one of the writers in that bill was excluding Monsanto from any type of legal action if somewhere down the road, years down the road, it's found out that these modified GMOs cause cancer. Monsanto will be exempt from being able to be sued for it. And, you know, that's almost a pre-admission of guilt.
Well, you know, it looks like there's a synergy, a social synergy coming together here of a lot of the negative influences. And the outcome of all these negative, more negative than positive, is will be very, very dark and negative. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, unfortunately, we have a State Department right now that promised us transparency, and it's been the least transparent, you know, State Department we've ever had. He was supposed to be whistleblower friendly and wanted, you know, legitimate change in the government. And he's prosecuted more whistleblowers throughout his tenure than the last four presidents combined. He promised transparency and honesty in government and no more executive orders. He's written more executive orders than the last three presidents combined. And most of their meetings have been behind closed doors. So I think we're in pretty bad shape. I know a lot of the victims that I speak with tend to blame most of this on the Bush-Cheney State Department. In reality, most of this research was being done long before Bush ever came on the scene. The Patriot Act certainly opened the door for its use a little bit more, but the hopes that we had that this administration was going to be different certainly have been dashed. And I think I write in my book that as far as human rights and privacy, if Bush put the football on the tee, Obama kicked it through the upright.
Oh my God! So, you know, there's not much difference in because of these major things that we're talking about. Usually, we're talking about the money-based system that we're talking about that has the greatest influence, it seems like to me, and they buy about anyone. Is the corruption level, John, so high today that they can pretty well buy about anybody with that system of mammon and money and everything?
I think so, and that's why I make the point in my book that people are looking for ways to shield this technology, and the ultimate solution is not going to be from shielding or wearing a suit that blocks it. You know, the ultimate solution is going to have to be political, and that's going to have to be voting morality instead of voting your party affiliation. And I would consider myself probably more libertarian, but I mean, I have had more success at talking to Republican leaders about this technology than I have Democratic leaders. But both parties of government basically want control and want bigger government. So we need to start looking for the people, be it Republican, third party, or Democrat, that want smaller government. And the point I make in my book is my feelings on a federal government is responsible for three things. Provide me with a military, make sure my water and my air are clean. Basically, that's it. If you're able-bodied, you should be working, not living off of the government. We certainly need to take care of our, you know, our needy and our elderly, but it ought to be more of a workfare instead of a pure welfare state, because welfare is control too. And I make that point in the book. I mean, you look at the studies, it's hard to get out of welfare. Once it starts, it's usually generational, and people that are dependent on the government are going to vote the way the government wants them to vote. They're not going to vote with independent thought. And the only way we can get change is to put some ethical and moral people back into government.
That's well said. I've emphasized the entrepreneurship of the American public at large, but individuals working, they've invented a lot of internet devices over the years using Indiegogo and Kickstarter and things like this. But all of that can create industries in the future. So I think this getting behind small business is one angle or one thing to do.
No, it certainly is. And, you know, the IRS was targeting small businesses pretty hard, and they got caught doing that. That's been in the news recently, where now they're saying that they're going to lighten the hand on some of the small businesses. But, you know, the tax structure in this country has made it such where it's hard for a small business to make it. It's even hard for large corporations to make it. But no matter how bad you may perceive capitalism, and I know a lot of the younger people, you know, have been brainwashed in the universities and in high school to think that capitalism's a bad thing, but you certainly have a better chance at succeeding and making it under a capitalistic society than a socialist society. And the way I look at it is, at least there's the chance of capitalism sharing the wealth. If the company's making money, they're going to hire people, and you know, you'll make money in a job. While capitalism shares the wealth, socialism only shares the misery.
Right.
And there's a reason that most of these people in socialist countries are dying to try to get out of them and get here. It's because it doesn't work.
We've got about 4 minutes left in our interview this evening. What would be any of your concluding remarks or conclusions or anything that we missed you can put forward?
Well, I mean, I would say that the impetus for writing my original book back in 2008 was so if anybody had a loved one, a family member, a wife, a son, a kid, that came to you complaining that they're being followed and that they're hearing voices, you know, my request would be that you grab one of my books, read it, understand the technology. They may not actually be suffering from a mental illness. There are technologies that can do this. And my first book did help. I mean, I had quite a few people call me saying, you know, we've been to 4 psychiatrists with our son, and now we understand why he's not getting better, that this is actually harassment, not mental illness. My website is newbreedmovie.com. Both books can be purchased there or through Barnes & Noble or Amazon. And off of newbreedmovie.com, you can also get in touch with me through that.
Give us that
well.
Website again very slowly, would you, please?
It's www.newbreedmovie.com.
Okay. We've got, we're going to put up that. We don't have that up, but we have all the click-offs for all your books, the last two books here. And would you want us to give you a contact number, too, or not?
There's not really a contact number, but... But I can be contacted.
That site. What advice would you have the average individual now that is beginning to suffer some of these symptoms of being attacked? Who should they get in touch with you, and then you can refer them to someone else? Would that be one way to handle it, or what? What would be your best advice to individuals who are beginning to be targeted by these kinds of technologies?
I'll tell you what, the catchphrase for that is electronic harassment. And if you Google electronic harassment, you'll either see me come up or any number of human rights organizations that are now dealing with the onslaught of these victims.
Okay. And, of course, your practice of your medicine and stuff is primarily in the San Antonio area. Is that right?
Yeah, primarily. I do stem cell therapy, so I do have a global clientele that comes to me for stem cells for joint regeneration and spine regeneration. So that's my, you know, my mainstay is pain medicine, which and mostly dealing with stem cell therapy.
Oh, okay. So. Well, we want to really thank you this evening for being with us and giving such a fine, insightful presentation of this problem. And this last book, my gosh, you not only have a print version, but you have an e-version also on Amazon. Is that correct?
That's right. There is a Kindle version of Guinea Pigs Technology.
Right. So I was reading through that some of that earlier yesterday, and it's very insightful, and I can do nothing but highly recommend this book and your previous book also. And we have those click-offs up there. We have a bio on you right now up on the site. And we certainly do really respect. John, you know, you've really done a lot of work over the years. Just writing these two books was a tremendous effort and accomplishment, in my opinion. And that gives the American public has a chance through the reading of these books and if they're beginning to be exposed, or they can pass this on to other people that could save some lives. I thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate it,
okay,
George.
Thank you very much, and good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you.